Welcome to Agency of the Month, brought to you by CenturyLink on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Hello and welcome to Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Sean McCauley, and you're listening to Agency of the Month featuring the Department of the Navy. Today I'm speaking with Captain Jim Kilby. He's the Deputy for Ballistic Missile Defense Aegis Combat Systems for the Navy's Surface Warfare Directorate. Today we're going to talk about the future of the Aegis Ballistic Missile Defense System. The modernized version of Aegis has been around since the late 80s, and it's the first fully integrated computerized combat system for the Navy. In a nutshell, that means it's a network of computers that can automatically integrate the weapons, radar, and other combat critical parts of a ship to quickly adapt and face new challenges and missions. Now, Captain Kilby, before we dive into the future of the Aegis system, I want to ask you first about your experience with it, because you've worked on it for quite a long time. Is that right?
Sure, absolutely. You know, I've been in the Navy 27 plus years, and I didn't get to the fleet until late 1986, early 1987, and Aegis had just started really in our Navy at that point. The first few ships were commissioned and operating, and the first ship of that class was USS Ticonderoga. Even though she commissioned in 1983, there was a significant amount of work, a decade and a half, that went into her creation. And the primary difference between USS Ticonderoga and some of her other ships on the waterfront, her sister ships, was that she had an integrated combat system. And the name Aegis is a spinoff off of Zeus's shield, which is to protect him against all threats. So Aegis is an integrated combat system, as opposed to having a combat system that has standalone systems that are integrated by a human or a tactical action officer. So for the first time, we created a system through a network of computers, the command and decision system, the spy system, the Aegis display system, and the weapons control system to operate in concert with each other with increasing levels of automation to handle some more complicated threats. So that was the beginning in 1983, and the first ships were baseline one cruisers, and they had a Mark 26 launcher on the front of them, and they were well and capable ships, and were soon replaced by a next generation, which was a baseline two cruisers, USS Bunker Hill and beyond. And we started on this kind of journey of producing cruisers and destroyers that have different levels of increasing capability as those ships were commissioned and are modernized. So right now, those first five cruisers have been decommissioned because they weren't able to be backfitted affordably with a Mark 41 vertical launching system, which would allow them to fire the Tomahawk missile. So all the ships since then, though, have been brought into being with baselines. They're supported by sailors that go to schools all over the country, but primarily in Dahlgren, Virginia, that prepare them with how to fight this integrated combat system. So even now, we are going into kind of a new phase of Aegis, which relates to what you talked about with Nick Girton, open architecture. And we are producing baseline 9, which is our latest baseline, and it's instantiated primarily on two ships, USS Chancellorsville, which has been modernized, a cruiser, to have this new baseline, and USS John Paul Jones. And that is a COTS open architecture baseline, which does all the same functionality as before, but with much greater computing power. So there's a whole history there, a legacy of producing Aegis and sustaining it and keeping it relevant for the threats that we face today.
So Aegis has been around for a little while, and I want to ask you about sort of the life cycle of Aegis so far. I'm assuming as decades go by and missions change for the Navy, the Aegis system has to reinvent itself, come out with new versions of itself. The Navy, I'm sure, is really on top of developing it. And it's a multi-mission type of capability for the Navy. So there's a lot of moving parts going on. So what spurs a desire or a need to update and redevelop the Aegis system?
Well, there's been threat drivers. There's been operational changes, the way we use our fleets. Originally, I would say that the idea behind the Aegis Cruiser was created when we were still in the Cold War. So we had a different view of how we were going to fight those ships, maybe. And now we're finding ourselves in many more places around the world, closer in to land, which complicates how the radar receives data and processes things. So as we've advanced our radars through generations, the original five ships had a Spy 1A radar. Now we have a Spy 1B radar and D and DV radar. And this Baseline 9 ships, the destroyers will have a thing called the Multi-Mission Signal Processor, which will allow those ships to better do ballistic missile defense and air defense, classic air defense, at the same time. So I would say there's two things. It's technology and the threat have kind of driven us on this stair-step approach to make the ships more capable. I would say also when we created the Aegis Cruiser, the folks, Admiral Meyer and a host of other people that designed and worked hard to develop that baseline, they did such a good job that architecture has been able to receive more mission than they originally anticipated, to include ballistic missile defense, which is on many cruisers and destroyers today. So their system, their engineering and systems engineering that went forward to kind of put this baseline to sea has been able to accept a lot of additional tasking placed upon it by the threats that we see today.
I'm speaking with Captain Jim Kilby. He's Deputy for Ballistic Missile Defense for Aegis Combat Systems for the Navy's Surface Warfare Directorate. We'll be right back with more Agency of the Month here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My name is Sean McCauley. We'll be right back.
It looks like the forecast is calling for a whole new cloud. Brought to you by CenturyLink. Get a visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions with CenturyLink, all built on a global, secure, carrier-grade network. And their custom solutions and support models are designed to enhance your efficiency every day of the week. Let their cloud infrastructure blanket you with security. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Welcome back to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Sean McCauley, and today I'm speaking with Captain Jim Kilby. He's Deputy for Ballistic Missile Defense for Aegis Combat Systems at the Navy's Surface Warfare Directorate. Today we're talking about the future of the Aegis Ballistic Missile Defense System. When we last left off, we talked a little bit about where the Aegis system came from and how it works. Going forward, I'd like to talk a little bit about the future of the Aegis system, starting with sort of the longevity of the current version, the current line. You guys call it a baseline. Baseline 9 is currently being developed, but the current baseline you've got now, it's expected that that can last another 40 years. Is that correct?
Well, the ships are designed. That's their lifespan, 40 years. But we expect that they'll, you know, we have in plans now a new baseline that's in development. We call it ACB-16, and we're working on the requirements that are going to go into the baseline that follows that. So that goes a little bit to my job, and the job of my office now is to define the requirements for the future. So that's one part of the job is to define the requirements and present those to the acquisition community so they can produce a technical solution to meet that requirement. And then there's another portion of it, which is to defend the budget. And so we program dollars each year in a budget to meet that requirement as well. So those are the two functions of the basic functions of requirements officers in the Pentagon today.
So I do want to ask you a little bit about the budget, because there's no way we can really not ask a question about that, especially with sequestration and the budget challenges that that's creating. What kind of impact has this been having on the Aegis system and the future development of the Aegis system?
I will tell you, earlier in the interview, I mentioned that we had programmed a lot of money in the Navy to preserve Aegis and keep it whole. And one of my focuses here in the office is preserving that investment and ensuring we do what we need to do to keep our ships combat ready with our sailors at sea. So it's going to be a challenging time, and we're all ready to meet that challenge as best as we can to keep our ships operating forward. And that's probably all I can say right now.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Baseline 9, the new version of Aegis that's currently under development. Who's involved in this? Is there like a multitude of different countries that are being involved? Because I know there's a lot of different partners that are getting on board with this.
Well, not countries, but there's a lot of different organizations in the Navy, including the Missile Defense Agency, that are working to create this baseline. So Lockheed Martin is the primary vendor behind Baseline 9. And the key components behind it is this thing called a common source library. So we're developing think of it as a library that's got modules of code in it that do different functions. And eventually we test and put that code together to ensure it's going to be as capable, as have the endurance, have the stability, have all the things we need to do to make that program work at sea. That starts in Morristown. It gets tested by government teams to validate that. It eventually goes on a ship with a test plan, and we step through increments of that test plan to eventually get that baseline certified before it deploys and goes forward to service one of the fleet commanders. Huge number of folks involved in that in different organizations that each have a part to make it become reality. I don't want to underscore the significance of Baseline 9 because it's the first program where the Missile Defense Agency and the Navy are jointly producing an integrated program. So the Missile Defense Agency is responsible for the code that provides capability against ballistic missiles, and the Navy does all the normal functions we've always had. BMD ships, or ballistic missile defense ships, prior to Baseline 9 have had two tactical baselines on them, the Aegis baseline, their normal Aegis baseline, and a missile defense capable baseline. And depending on what the tasking is of those ships is, they load either one of those baselines to meet the threat. Baseline 9 ships will just have a single baseline with an integrated program and different ways to approach different threats depending on where they go. So that's a huge, significant leap and an ease of burden on the sailors because they won't have to learn and train the two different baselines. But it also requires a lot of coordination with the Missile Defense Agency and the Navy to ensure that they're producing this aggregate capability together and on time, which is going to reach ahead next summer on USS John Paul Jones, which is the first ship that's going to receive that integrated baseline.
Now, I want to talk to you a little bit about the collaboration process because it sounds like it's a really important piece of this entire equation, but I want to paint a little picture about the library that this is based off of.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I'm looking at a little diagram of the Aegis combat system, and it looks like a giant ecosystem. There's a navigation part, there's search radar, there's the gun parts, and they're all connected with arrows, and it's like a giant circle of life almost.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that that's kind of what the library looks like. It's just on a software level.
It is, and if you think of kind of a line with time on the x-axis, there's different drops of that computer program that add capabilities. So the test plan that the Missile Defense Agency and the Navy have put together goes after specific capability that's added each one of those drops. And the test plan that instantiates itself on John Paul Jones, we go out and run specific live fire test events and other things to go prove that capability out, eventually producing the version of the baseline that we want to deploy and test at sea. But each one of those steps is equally important because we don't create a computer program and go out and test it. We create it over time and build and add portions to it to understand all those complex interrelations so we can produce the best possible product over time. So it takes a long time, a lot of effort, a lot of testing starts at land, at Morristown and other land sites before it even gets to the ship. So we have a good idea of what we're putting to sea with ships. And as you intimate that, there's a lot of moving parts to that. It's not just firing a missile off. There's navigation. There's the sensing part of it with the radar. There's the tracking part of it where I acknowledge what that contact is, and I am able to develop a track which I can ultimately fire ammunition against or create a fire control solution and consummate that engagement. And then look at that track after the engagement has occurred and say, was I successful or not, and do I need to re-engage that track? So incredibly complicated system, as you intimate, that we've gotten very good at over the last decades of fielding and producing. And I think if we continue to follow this plan with a common source library, we'll produce even more successful programs in the future.
Well, with systems that are so computer-based, obviously the threat of cyber attacks come into play. Are you guys, I mean, I'm assuming you are taking a head-first approach and making sure that it is cyber secure. Is there anything you can share on that front?
I would just say that information assurance that's what we call creating a program that is safe against those things. Information assurance has grown in significance over the last 15 years, and it's at the forefront of our program design now. So yes, it's a very key consideration on how we create our systems and how we protect our systems.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the collaboration with the Navy and the Missile Defense Agency. How did that germinate?
Well, it started, as far back as after the Gulf War, when we started to see ballistic missile threats evolving. And I think pioneers at that time were looking, saying, geez, is there a capability here with the Aegis system? Can we explore that? So incrementally over the next decade, we looked at using the spy radar to far exceed its original design parameters and range and what it could do. So the spinoff was a creation of a program in the early 2000s where we were looking at, could we conduct ballistic missile defense, active ballistic missile defense with an Aegis ship, not just track a ballistic missile. And that was the start of that program. And since we fielded the first capability on destroyers in 2004, we've done many, many flight test missions over time. And just as the Aegis system added capability kind of in the stair-step approach, the Aegis flight test missions conducted by the Aegis Ballistic Missile Defense Program Office have incrementally tested greater capability over time. We just conducted a flight test mission last week, FTM-21 flight test mission, where USS Lake Erie launched a SM-31 Bravo successfully against a target off of Kauai. So having a dedicated test ship and the Navy and the Missile Defense Agency cooperating where they have a ship that's identified to do the lion's share of this testing, not all of it, because all our ballistic missile defense ships can participate in that, has allowed the stability for both those organizations to work together to field this capability. And next summer, the John Paul Jones will assume the role as the test ship from Lake Erie because she will have the latest program to go test in the future. So it requires a significant amount of in-person meetings from the technical director at the Aegis BMD level. This is Captain Mike Anderson, and Captain John Hill on the Program Executive Office Integrated Warfare Systems level to ensure those systems remain lockstep in their development approach to produce this capability. So a lot of coordination required. And that applies to the budget as well. So as the Missile Defense Agency and the Navy adjust their budgets, we got to look to each other to make sure we don't affect each other adversely. And we do that all the time.
So what's the future timeline for the Next Generation Aegis system?
Well, she is one variant. The non-BMD version of that baseline is being tested on USS Chancellorsville in the late fall. And the lion's share of the BMD, or Integrated Air and Missile Defense testing, will occur on USS John Paul Jones next summer. So those two test windows are probably the the ones to watch for this capability to be fielded shortly thereafter.
Captain Jim Kilby is Deputy for Ballistic Missile Defense Aegis Combat Systems for the Navy's Surface Warfare Directorate. Agency of the Month continues in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Sean McCauley.
Let's get down to brass tacks. There's nothing more important than trust. CenturyLink offers cybersecurity solutions to the government. And the Department of Homeland Security has approved CenturyLink to provide enhanced cybersecurity services to critical infrastructure entities to keep you efficient and secure. As your trusted technology partner, their visionary cloud infrastructure, global broadband network, along with custom communication solutions and response dedicated support, provide the scalable solutions you need 24/7, 365. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Welcome back to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. This is Agency of the Month featuring the Department of the Navy. I'm speaking with Captain Jim Kilby. He's Deputy for Ballistic Missile Defense Aegis Combat Systems for the Navy's Surface Warfare Directorate. When we last left off, we were talking about the next generation of Aegis. It's called Baseline 9. And we talked about where Navy wants to take the Aegis system into the next decade. But I want to ask you a little bit about the challenges of development. What are some of the biggest bumps you've encountered along the way so far?
Well, one is the most significant that we've already talked about, which is now I'm having two organizations responsible for a single capability. So the coordination there can't be underscored, and the significant effort maintained by both those organizations to maintain a lockstep approach is critical, and that's a challenge, but it's certainly being met by both organizations to field capability.
Well, actually, before you go on, I'm sorry to interrupt, but why don't we talk a little bit specifics on how you maintain that?
Yeah, there are many program reviews, and each program review has a specific purpose to review where we are in progress of a baseline or a capability, and where we need to go in the future. And oftentimes at those reviews, there's an entrance criteria to make it to the review, and there's exit criteria to successfully get out of the review. And there's panels of senior folks from different organizations that sit on that panel and objectively view the data presented for them to decide whether or not that program's ready to go forward. So there is specific interaction and frequent interaction where the program is reviewed and managed very closely by leadership to ensure we field that capability correctly. And there's times where we say, hey, I don't think we met this. We need to go back, and not I, but the panel says, we need you to go back and review the following things and come back and present to us. So the system is a 360 system, which prevents folks from getting locked into kind of a groupthink mentality and saying, hey, it's all good. Everyone comes to that meeting with a specific focus and background to apply that close scrutiny to ensure we're fielding as we intend to. Challenges, I would say, in the fiscal environment, we need to make sure that we keep our investment where we need to field capability. That's certainly a challenge, but not one that isn't addressed every day. So we've kind of intimated the focus that needs to be met to kind of keep alignment there. There's a technical piece of that, and there's a fiscal part of that, which I'm intimating or discussing now. And there's a kind of road ahead piece too. So you can't just get so focused on today and the baseline that I'm testing today that I'm not thinking about the future and trying to work ahead and anticipate what capability I'm going to need in the future so another part of the organization can start developing solutions for that. So it's a lot. It's not just a single area of focus in time. You're executing a program now, you're planning for the next program, and you're planning for a future program, which all needs to have time, focus, and leadership energy behind it. Three baselines from now, what I call ACB Next or Advanced Capability Build Next, will host a new radar on destroyer DDG-123. It's called the Air and Missile Defense Radar. So while I'm working and focused on, based on 9 on John Paul Jones today, I'm equally concerned about doing the things I need to do to ensure we set up that future baseline for success, going through all the acquisition milestones it needs to with the planning and focus to set that crew up for success as well. So there, it's not just a single point solution. It's kind of a continuum of things that require a different focus and coordination depending on where they are in the lifespan.
To me, it sounds like you just is sort of the foundation in terms of philosophy and capability of the Littoral Combat Ship and the Joint Strike Fighter, that it's a system designed to be adaptable depending on the mission. Is that fair? Is that the right call?
It is, and I would say there's a lot of history and phrases and thoughts that go with Aegis, but one of them was coined by Admiral Meyer, who was the founding father of Aegis, and he said that we want to build a little, test a little, and learn a lot. And that talks to that iterative approach where we're not trying to figure out the final solution now. We want to iteratively do this over time and ensure we fully understand the capability that we're building and ultimately deploying. So that mantra has carried over to the Missile Defense Agency and the Aegis BMD program office with the flight test mission plan that I've described, where every one of those tests gets iteratively a little more difficult to fully understand the capability of the system. So I would say that is the cornerstone or a key foundational tenet of Aegis, is understanding that this is very difficult, requires a lot of focus, effort, and understanding. And we're going to be at this in we're not going to come up with the answer immediately. We're going to have to work at it and test it and field it and go back and work on it. And maybe we're going to discover stuff that we didn't anticipate that we have to go fix to make sure we don't have second and third order effects as we introduce new capability. All that's kind of in the Aegis history and has been in the Aegis history since its inception.
Now, I know the public sector is a little bit different, but even the Defense Department's different than a lot of other civilian agencies. And I would imagine that a lot of Aegis experts get poached by these other multi-platform programs.
I would say so. I mean, yes, I'm sure that exists. But I would also tell you that unlike any other program I've been associated with, Aegis and the pride that comes with being associated with a program has been a very significant factor in its success. And a lot of folks that were with Aegis, once we started to complete, what we thought was the capability, when we started the Aegis BMD program office, they joined that effort and made their connection or kept their ties with Aegis as we fielded this very new capability, the ballistic missile defense profile. So there's a personal and professional commitment that I've observed with folks that have been aligned with this program because of its success, because of their pride, because of the commitment to produce that. And that goes on the industry side as well as the government side. So there's many folks that I've been exposed to at Lockheed Martin that this is their career, and they stay up late at night thinking about the Aegis system, how to make it better, and what's in the next generation, just as often as I do on the government side or in my program office. So the program enjoys a tremendous sense of loyalty, and I can't explain that. I can just tell you that it exists.
Captain Jim Kilby is Deputy for Ballistic Missile Defense for Aegis Combat Systems for the Navy's Surface Warfare Directorate. That's it for this week's edition of Agency of the Month featuring the Department of the Navy. Thank you again very much for listening. My name is Sean McCauley. You can find all of this month's interviews with the Department of the Navy online at federalnewsradio.com. Just search Agency of the Month.
You've been listening to Agency of the Month, brought to you by CenturyLink on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety at federalnewsradio.com. Agency of the Month, Thursday mornings at 11:30 AM, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Your source for federal news now.